Greetings and salutations, and welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies. I am Noah, and I am here with
Kayla.
And we're back for another Cinema Swap episode.
We are, in fact.
Yeah, these are kind of like the new We've Never Seens, you know?
We haven't done a We've Never Seen in a while. We should do...
We're running out of movies we've never seen. I mean, there's a lot of them, obviously, but it's like, we want to make sure there are ones, too, that people will listen to.
Yeah, and I definitely... It was funny, because we decided on this, and then, like, when I was watching them, I was like, why didn't we do a We've Never Seen? So we only had to watch one movie instead of two.
I know. Yeah. Major bummer. Well, usually it's like, I think with these, I was always thinking like, oh, it's still only one movie for each person. But usually I want to watch even the one that I assign because like,
right.
It's usually been a while since I've seen it.
Yeah. I mean, the one I picked today, I hadn't seen in like 3 years.
Same. And it was funny because the one we did, mine that I gave you was Heather's, and the last time I saw that was in 2019, but it was also like April. It was like April 6th, the last time I saw that.
Huh.
So it was almost like exactly 3 years ago that I watched that. Before we get into our episodes, what we like to do is get into the answers we got to our last question of the week from our last episode. And our question of the week last week was, what is your favorite movie based on a video game?
Your favorite and we got, video game based on a movie?
That was it. Yes. I kind of flipped it around.
I mean, there are movies yes. based on video games.
Yeah, but not very good ones. So that would have been a bad question. So I'm glad we actually didn't ask that. Yeah, it's your favorite video game based on a movie. You are correct.
And you've been playing the new Lego Star Wars this week.
I have. I'm almost through the prequel trilogy, making my way through. It's pretty fun. There's a lot of like fetch quests. Like you kind of gotta like go back and forth like between the same areas a lot of times. Like so they kind of like pad out the runtime with that. But
sure.
It's all good because I'll just run around and break stuff and get money and buy upgrades. Like I like you can like pick up like objects and just like throw them with the force at people. Mm. And that's what I'll usually just do for most of my time.
That sounds fun. I haven't played it yet.
It is fun. We did get actually, and I'm really, that's a good point because I was really upset like right after we finished recording because I was like, wait, neither of us talked about like the original Lego Star Wars.
Yeah.
Which was very off brand for both of us.
Yeah.
But Waffle came in and she saved us because she said Lego Star Wars, the complete saga or the Phineas and Ferb Across the Second Dimension game on the Wii, which I didn't play that.
I didn't either.
But
yeah, I played Lego Star Wars on the PC, and that was a big,
a real gamer moment over
real
there.
Real gamer.
Wow, dang.
And well, that was just how we played. Like, we had a GameCube and we had a Wii, but we played a lot of PC games. You know, Putt-Putt, Nancy
yeah,
Drew.
Yeah, of course.
But I did play Lego Indiana Jones with one of my friends all the time on the Wii. That was like a big childhood memory.
I'm glad you brought up Lego Indiana Jones because we also got someone that mentioned Lego Indiana Jones. Bryce mentioned that one. And that's a great game because they had two of them too. There was like the Lego Indiana Jones and then there was Lego Indiana Jones 2, like The Adventure Continues or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what that one was called. But that was a fun game because there was and I never even watched those movies as a kid. So like I played the game.
We did.
But
I
had not seen the movie. So I literally had no idea what the story
Interesting.
Was.
Interesting.
But it was fine.
We watched those movies a lot as kids.
Maybe that's why I don't like them because
yeah, we
I don't
were
have,
very
like,
into them.
So you got both experiences with that one.
Let's see. Gabe said on Spotify, it's the same on every console, but Toy Story 3 for the Wii. Hey, that rhymed.
Oh.
That was also
a
quote by him.
Yeah, he said it rhymed.
He said, it slaps harder than any other movie game out there. It felt like a real game rather than an obligation in the movie game era. Mm.
I've seen a lot of YouTubers cover this game. I think definitely Scott the Waz covered this game in one of his videos. And it looks really fun. Like, it definitely looks like a really fun
I don't
game.
Believe I played that one. I feel like
I
vaguely remember playing some kind of Toy Story game.
No, yeah, it's like, it's definitely...
Is there a Toy Story... What's the Toy Story 2 game? Is there a Toy Story 2 game?
I don't know. I don't think I mean, there might be. I don't remember that one, but I do know, like, the Toy Story 3 is, like, you're basically, I think you're Buzz Lightyear, and it's, like, kind of like a Mario game, or, but, like, Mario 64, and you're, like, going around Andy's room and, like, different toy rooms and, like, collecting different things, which is, like, a very cool premise for a game. Like, just, you're a toy.
Okay, I believe the game that my brain is thinking of... I could be wrong.
Is Grand Theft Auto.
Is Toy Story 2? Yes. Yes, I did play this game. Toy Story 2, Buzz Lightyear to the Rescue, and I'm pretty sure I played it on PC, but now my brain is, like, all of a sudden having a moment where it's, like, remembering something from my childhood that was locked up in the brain.
I'm sure that's what someone was like in our episode last week when we talked about Beethoven SNES. You know, one person.
Yeah, they probably wished they still had it.
Yes. What other answers did we get around the interwebs?
Kevin said on Facebook, GoldenEye.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. Oh,
that's a very popular game. I never played it. It basically started like the first-person shooter genre. It was on N64. It was based on James Bond. And there's like very big tournaments around. Like, I mean, I don't know if there is with the pandemic now, but like it was like a big tournament game. And people like play it. Yeah, very famous game. I haven't played it, so, but I do know a lot of people like it, and that is like, that was one I expected to get from someone. One I didn't expect was from Mike, because he said, when I was a kid, I loved the Alvin and the Chipmunks game for the DS, so that's also valid, you know? That must have been based on the first movie.
I don't think I played that one.
No, I definitely didn't.
That would have been for what, that came out in 2006?
Yes, I think so. That sounds right. Yeah.
That's a fun option.
It is a fun option. One that, again, I would not have expected. We have another game I didn't expect was X-Men Origins Wolverine, which didn't even know that was a game, but pretty cool.
I didn't know that was a game.
Pretty cool. I would guess it's probably like a PlayStation. It looks like a PS2 game from the cover. Let's see. X-Men Origins Wolverine. Look it up. Let's see what it is.
Yeah. PlayStation, Xbox, all of the above.
Very fun. Very fun. We got a Star Wars game. God Jester on Twitter said Star Wars, The Knights of the Old Republic, which I do know that's like the main Star Wars game people talk about when they talk about Star Wars games.
Sure.
I think a lot of people
We played that.
Like Star Wars games better now, too, because they usually... tell stories that are more like interesting and not based in like Skywalker lore. So I think that like a lot of fans like
we played Battlefront, I believe, was one we played. And then we also played, I remembered this after we recorded, Lord of the Rings game on the computer.
That's fun.
And like I definitely played it, some of the like fighting, like you're killing orcs and stuff. But I do remember you could, like, create your own character, and you could, like, you know, do a character thing.
Wow, it's like Skyrim, like, all but these Lord of the Rings.
Like, yeah, like, a wizard, and you could do, like, all the, basically, like, an elf and whatever all the things are in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, all the characters.
And I would spend hours just, like, creating characters.
That's so fun. That sounds pretty fun.
Because we never had, like, Sims and stuff, so I played my version of Sims creating Lord of the Rings characters.
I think, you know how they're doing the Harry Potter game that, like, no one wants to buy anymore? But that, like, is, like, I think it's open world. But I would like to see something like that, but, like, Lord of the Rings. Like, Skyrim, Lord of the Rings kind of thing. That would be really cool, especially now.
That's what I think the one that was...
Well, yeah, but was it, like, fully open world? Like, I was just thinking, like, now with, like... how graphics are even better, and like you can have bigger open worlds that people are making. It'd be interesting to see someone make one now. Maybe they will out of like if the Amazon show gets popular, maybe that will spawn a video game. I don't know. And then lastly, Dan said Spider-Man 2 for the PS2. That kind of rhymes if you want to rhyme two with two. So another rhyming one there. Yeah, I know a lot of people like that one. I haven't played that, so. But I do know a lot of people like it, and it kind of changed. I think that one and also Spider-Man 2, like, really changed the way that people saw Spider-Man swinging. And that game changed how Spider-Man swung in games, because it used, like, different algorithms for him swinging on buildings rather than just having the web like shoot into the sky and like be hooked onto nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So it had like a really cool physics engine, I think. And a lot of people like that one. Cool.
Sure.
Very fun. That was a fun question because we don't talk about video games at all, really. Usually, I think we've talked about Lego Star Wars like 4 times, but that's it.
Yeah.
So,
but we both like video games a lot.
Yeah.
So.
But not like enough to do a podcast on them. So like we don't talk about them because like no. I don't feel confident enough to talk about them. But like it's like
I am a very, very casual and very bad video game player.
It's like a
I'm
hobby
slightly more. Above average at Mario Kart, but like I don't play enough to be amazing at it.
Yeah.
And then Lego games take me forever. Pokemon takes me forever.
Hey, it's all fun. It's all good. It's all, yeah. I mean, you can still just create Lord of the Rings characters, and that doesn't take any.
Yeah, I mean, I just decorate my Animal Crossing island for hours on end. That's all I need.
Oh, man. Well, let's jump into our main episode, which again is a cinema swap episode where we'll each give each other a movie to watch that the other person hasn't seen. And usually one that like the other person thinks they would like or like things would be interesting to see what their thought is on, not just like some random movie. We try to pick ones that are going to be interesting to talk about and also streaming usually.
Sure.
So we don't have to like make ourselves pay money for things that we don't have to. Yeah, so let's just jump right into our first movie here today, which this is the one that I picked for you to watch. It's Heathers from 1989, not the like 2018 show, that not that one. Yeah, it's the movie. So yeah, definite content warning for suicide in both of the movies, and then in Heathers, there's also like other like mentions of violence and homophobia and stuff. So just like steer clear if you don't want to listen to that. It's all
yep.
good. Yeah. Why don't we just jump into this quick synopsis here that we have for Heathers? Do you want me to read this? Or
sure.
You
it's
it?
Very short because I didn't know how spoiler
it's fine.
We were
I feel
going.
Like everyone knows what Heathers is kind of about.
Yeah.
So it's fine. So Veronica is a normal high schooler in a clique of, quote, Heathers. When Jason Dean comes to town and him and Veronica start dating, she begins to realize her best friends are also her worst enemies.
And what will that come is, about from
I hate
the
realization.
When that happens.
Yeah, this movie, it is now obviously a cult classic, but it did like flop at the box office. It had a $3 million budget, which is pretty good for like what the movie looks like and what they were all the sets and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it only made 1.1 million. So not great, even though it did get good reviews. But like I said, now it has a cult following. There's a musical. There was a TV show for a season that didn't get great reviews. Yeah, I think this is now one that most people know, which is why I kind of wanted to pick it. Because you were picking a smaller one that was a little more niche. So I wanted to like counteract that a little bit. But it's also like it's more of a cult movie still. So yeah, that was one reason why I picked it. I also selfishly wanted to watch it again because I hadn't seen it in a while. I'd picked Breakfast Club before for the same series. So I was like, we can kind of pick a similar movie, something that is a little more satirical to talk about rather than like a straight drama, which we have done a lot of dramas on this show in this series. So I don't know. I thought it'd be like a different change of pace for Cinema Swap as a whole. And again, I was kind of thinking too, like, I knew you were going to pick something that was a little bit more drama geared. So I wanted to pick something that was not that.
Sure.
Yeah, that not really many deep reasons for picking this. I just kind of saw it was on your watch list and I was like, sure, that one looks fun. And it's on Amazon Prime. So why not?
Cool. Yeah. So I hadn't watched this, but I have listened to the musical and I have watched parts of the musical, like certain numbers of the musical, like on YouTube. So I was pretty familiar with like all the material and then the songs from the musical version and the characters and stuff, but I just had never watched the actual film. I'm not really sure why. I guess I just never was interested in watching the film version. Once I had watched the musical, I'm a musical fan, so you know, stuff that's not as a musical is not as fun. Yeah, I liked it. I think I probably like it with the music better. because I think it kind of can make something a little more upbeat. Like, it is satirical, but mm-hmm. can give it kind of more va-va-voom to it, I guess.
Sure,
to
yeah, make it. Yeah, sure.
but it is, like, there's so many good lines from this that obviously, you know, are lines that a lot of people know because they're quoted mm-hmm. a lot. So it's funny to kind of see those lines that I've always sort of been familiar with and newer from this to sort of place them in the context of an actual scene and the context right. of the situation that the line was said. Yeah, I liked it. I thought that it was funny and it made me laugh. And then there were parts that I was like, that's very like 80s. And I understand yeah. like watching it why it definitely has become a cult classic, especially because of how like good the script is and how funny mm-hmm. and like kind of campy some of the moments are in it, that I can just imagine like groups going to screenings of this and like quoting oh, yeah. scenes together and just having a good time, like, you know, reliving a lot of those like funny moments.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. I think this would be really fun to watch with a big group of people. I have watched it twice alone, so
nice.
Maybe next time. yeah, I agree. I think it's one of those things too, where like even if now there are big lines, like, and you when you hear them, you know that they're really popular and like they're in the culture. I feel like there were probably lines where like the first time you heard them, it was yeah. already like, wow, that is a great line. And you just like automatically started saying it, because too, like a lot of the slang is, I think all the slang that they use is like not real slang. So it kind of creates it like its own world for the movie. And it doesn't really feel like it's ever going to be dated, because like the slang was never popular in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of just has like its own identity in that way, kind of like Clockwork Orange did, I guess, where like he created his own teenage slang for that movie or book, I guess. And so I think that was a really great choice by them for this one, because it gives it a little bit more of its own personality and less like a period piece, because I do think it doesn't, most if not all of it, feels like it takes place in like a fantasy world or like a heightened reality. So I think it is good that it does, the dialogue is not completely like natural in that way and like from our world, because I don't think that it would have worked as well if it was like people saying like radical or I don't know, whatever 1989 kids were like using.
Yeah, and I think it's cool too, because obviously this was more early on in that like high school drama comedy like sort of movie scene, and yeah. I can definitely see like other popular ones having like pulled from this, like Mean Girls yeah. specifically.
Mean Girls for sure, definitely.
Which I'm a big Mean Girls fan, and so yeah. it's cool to kind of see how that movie was influenced, and then in the same way mm. with like the language, and how they sort of yeah. develop their own slang and way of talking with each other. So it's yeah. kind of fun to see it in a different setting too.
Yeah, definitely. And it's like, this was supposed to be like a contrast to the John Hughes high school dramas,
uh-huh.
I guess, and probably also like Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And so it's, I see it too as kind of like a bridge between those two, where
yeah.
like you had the more, even though John Hughes movies did deal with more serious topics, they were definitely lighter. So you had the more light high school comedies, and then this kind of led the way to the more satirical, like, darker stuff. Even stuff like Clueless, which, like, Clueless is obviously, like, a rom-com, but I do think it has elements and, like, themes that wouldn't be in a John Hughes movie, too.
Right.
So I definitely think that this probably paved the way for a lot of that stuff, like you said. And, I mean, it even is popular now with the musical, like, very popular. And that was the TikTok sound that went viral like 2 years ago. Was that was the trend like 2 years ago, I think.
Uh-huh.
And so like it's still, people still talk about it and watch it. And like it still has maintained its status as like a high school drama that is popular today.
Yeah.
So I think they definitely like accomplished their goal here. Because even like Breakfast Club is like more of a period piece now than something that people still like watch and like talk about, you know?
Sure, yeah.
Where this feels a lot more like modern, I guess.
Uh-huh.
What did you think about some of the performances? Because there are, I think that's like, it's hard because I do like a lot of the performances, but it's also very like specific and over the top.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know if they would work for everyone, but it's interesting to like talk about those, I guess.
Yeah, I like how the adults act in this. I think it's very funny and comical the way that the adults like overact as being like just very terrible adults and mm-hmm. parents and, you know, role models and teachers and all that in the school system. And even like the cops and stuff are also terrible. We love a good ACAB movie. And no, but like it just, that is very comical to me, the way that they were directed and written and those parts were played. And then how the teens kind of like really led the show. I thought obviously the two main characters, JD and Veronica, are good. I think the Heathers, which maybe this was the point, I think there just wasn't enough, like, differential between the three of them.
Definitely.
I would have liked a little bit more of kind of, because obviously they're supposed to be the same, and they're all named Heather, and they're all a part of this Mean Girls group, but it would have been cool to see a little more variation between the three of them, because I kind of kept forgetting which Heather was which Heather. Just because they didn't have any kind of separate personalities. Kind of like in Mean Girls, how they're very similar, but they at least have some different characteristics or act differently and have different mannerisms that separate the characters more. So that would be my biggest complaint.
Definitely, yeah. I think Mean Girls does a better job of that, yeah. I think, too, it's like, I don't think this movie probably should have been called Heathers. Like, it probably was a fun idea when he started the script, but I don't think it really is about them as much as the movie goes on. And so I think, like, when you start it, you're expecting them to be more of the centerpieces.
Sure.
But it's more, like, about the high school itself. And because, like, even with the football guys, like, they're not Heathers, but, like, they serve a very big part in the story. And so I don't think it's really as much about the Heathers as more about, like, popularity in general.
Yeah.
Because even she says, like, I could be the next in line, and she technically, like, left the group. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that might have been a mistake there, too. But I agree that Mean Girls, I think, like, definitely pulled on that and then improved on it, because all three of them are a lot more unique and have, like, their own personalities, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing with the parents too. Yeah, I love the parents. I love how a lot of their scenes almost feel like the most dreamlike in the movie, because a lot of the movie, like I said, feels fake, but like their scenes feel like really fake. Like, and it's just really cool the way that, I don't know, it's just like every time the parents step on screen, it's like the complete tone of the movie changes.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And even with like, I like the contrast between how the parents react and then how like the teachers react differently.
Yeah.
Like how their response, they have a lot of the same notes in it, but it's so different. Like the parents are very complacent and the teachers and the school board is kind of like, how can we utilize this moment basically for our own greed essentially, and cover it up, which is what those kind of establishments usually do. So it just was interesting to see that sort of take on it, which is funny.
Yeah, and I think it shows, like, the focus of the movie definitely is, I mean, it's obviously the teenagers, but I think it really is about the parents, because that's more, I don't know. I mean, that's what he's writing the perspective from, the writer, and how, like, adults, I guess, see teenagers as, like, something to be studied, like they were kind of saying, rather than, like, actual people. And, like, when those studies about, like, teen suicide or depression or, like, you saw this during the pandemic, like, all the, like, using them as, like, a reason for pushing their ideas. Like, oh,
yeah,
guys,
like,
no one cares about teen suicide or, like, teen depression until, like, it serves their purposes, basically.
Right, of course.
So I thought that was a really interesting idea. And also, like, how the teenagers basically – treat high school as like just their entire life. Like there is a little bit mention of college, but I feel like they have this idea or this feeling around them that like this is their life and like there's nothing after this. And it's the stakes are like as high as they could be, which I definitely think is true when you're in like junior, I guess I think they're junior. So like that definitely feels like a very true depiction of how it feels to be in high school.
Yeah.
Where like this is the most like intense situation and there's nothing after this. This is
well,
like,
and especially when
life,
you
basically.
Are in those kind of groups where like you are the most popular person or you are the football star. Like if you're a high school sports star, that is your everything, like everything you post about. And now in this time especially, it's like it's in your Instagram bio and like there's nothing wrong with that, but that's just the way it is. And that's funny that that was what they sort of captured in like I laughed when they were showing the boys at the funeral and they had their like football helmets on. So comical to me because I was like, oh my gosh, that is so true. Like, you know, people get their high school senior pictures and they're getting them in their football uniform and holding their helmet and, you know, making a big deal about all those
things.
Their
whole personality.
Which,
yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. And I think that they did a really good job of capturing that because that is very true to high school. I mean, when I was in high school, my whole world was about soccer. So it was like, it was in my bio. I had it, you know, number 15, you know, it was there. So it's just funny. I think they did a good job of capturing like the high school lifestyle and kind of like what that is about and how all consuming it can be.
Yeah. And even for the outsider, which I guess in this, like JD is like the outsider and he's the one that I think you would assume maybe is more mature to see past that. I think in the beginning, and like that's your assumption where it's like, oh, well, he sees past the facade of high school and he's like, obviously, just sees how ridiculous all of this is. But even he, that's like what you realize, is also like completely wrapped up in this high school fantasy that they're all living in, and that's all he sees too. And like
it's really
like he also is obsessed with just his role in the system, I guess. Yeah, I really do like his performance too. I think like without his, I know a lot of people make fun of it, but I think it's really funny. I don't know. Like, because obviously it's supposed to be a satire on those kind of people and also those kind of performances in movies in general. And so I really think it works. And it's like one of the best parts of the movie.
I agree.
What did you think about the ending? Because the original ending was he was going to have blown up the school. And then the final scene was going to be a prom of them all in heaven. Basically, but then New World Pictures made him change it because it was too depressing of an ending. I'm not saying like that's the right ending, but I was wondering like what you thought
about. Yeah, I don't like
the
ending
that they did.
Definitely. I don't mind the ending. I don't know what I would have done to make it better. I do think that it wasn't as good as it probably could have been. Like, in terms of how good other portions of the movie are. But I don't think it's a bad ending, but I wouldn't say it's a great ending. Like, the ending is definitely one of the weakest parts of the whole movie, I would say, personally.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Both times I watched this, the ending definitely took a little bit of the wind out of the movie for me. And I feel like, I'm not saying that this is the ending. I mean, the original ending is what I think the ending should be. But I definitely feel like the end of the movie comes across as something that he wrote because he had to, rather than that was the ending he had in mind. It almost feels like a deleted scene kind of thing, where like alternate ending, and you're like, oh man, I'm glad that's not the ending. And I don't know what, like you said, I don't know what the ending would have been, but I definitely feel like watching it, it feels like he had just a darker ending in mind. And so I think if the ending was maybe just darker in a way, not maybe that he blows up the entire school, but maybe something else happens, or his like death is more tragic or something where the tone stayed
a
little more.
I think what would have been more interesting to me would be that his death would not be of his own fruition. So like his death I mean, you know, you don't have to do something completely comical, but it feels less satisfactory that, like, he blew himself up. Like, maybe get, because she did get, like, a final girl moment with the hair ribbon and kind of making a point to be like, oh, it looks like she's choosing her own path here instead of going with what she had done before. But maybe if she had had more of a final girl moment over him, because he was really the one manipulating her the whole time, and then maybe if something different comical happened to him. Like, you know, in Mean Girls.
Or if she had just killed him. Maybe he should have just died in the boiler room.
Yeah, like, or in, like, Mean Girls where she gets hit by the bus. Like, something like that where he's, like, about to blow himself up, but then something else happens that, like, kills him, I think would have fit better with the rest of the movie, because the rest of the movie does have very dark elements, but they're laced with a more comedic tone, and I felt like what was off to me about the ending was that it had the darker element, but it lost the comedic tone that the rest of the movie had. And so I think, you know, I'm not saying he needed to get hit by a bus, but like,
well, could have been funny.
It could have been funny, but some other kind of moment that he still died in the end, but it wasn't, you know, maybe something in the boiler room exploded and hits him instead or something along those lines.
Yeah, because I think the joke with him is that, like, he takes himself so seriously and he thinks he's like, so like such a like a Joker, basically.
Yeah.
Like literal like Joker, like the character.
Like the Joker,
Like the Joker. And it would have been funny, like you said, maybe if he did try to do this big dramatic, like, I'm gonna blow myself up moment, and then like something happens where like he just dies a completely like embarrassing, like, unintended way.
Yeah.
That just kind of shows how ridiculous he is.
Yeah.
If a school bus just, like, accidentally hits him. I don't know.
That would be so funny. Like, and
because
I feel
he's,
like
such an idiot. And, like, it would have been funny to see him, like, be, like, cut down like that. Like, in his final moment.
Yeah, instead of kind of getting what... I mean, it wasn't what he wanted, but he was still satisfied with his ending, which I feel like... isn't as satisfying to the audience as...
Yeah, or, like, maybe he, like, reaches out his arms, like, doesn't he reach out his arms, like he's gonna explode him, like, and she just shoots him again, maybe? Like, that would have been funny. Like, I don't know. I think there's just, like, something needed to happen in the ending that fit the movie better. And I also don't really, like... I don't know. Because she's, like you said, she's rejecting, I guess, the... I don't know. It feels just too neat, the ending, too, with, like, she's, like, rejecting... She takes the bow, and then she's, like, trying to be nice to the people that they were bullying. And I just, I don't know. Felt like
she killed
a studio
she
ending.
Was basically, like, killing someone, too. So...
Yeah. Maybe if they just both died in the boiler room. That would have been a dark ending, but at least it would have, like, I don't know. Something just needed to happen that was different than, like, this was, like, a John Hughes ending, basically, besides the blowing himself up thing. Where, like, she's, like, walking down the hall, and, like, this cheesy music plays, and it's like, oh, I guess this is, like... back to the 80s movies that we know and love. But other than the ending, like, I do think this is a really good movie. A couple, like, pacing issues aside. And it, I think, really, yeah, I will think it will hold up for basically a lot longer than it already has.
Yeah, I agree.
I wish that they did, like, a better release of it. Because Arrow, I think, did a 4K restoration.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But the only copy I can find is from the UK. Like, I can't find, like, any they made for... the US, and apparently the Blu-ray in the US is not great, so maybe someone needs to get the rights for that one, because I think they could make a cool copy of this, like a Criterion, or again, just an Arrow copy. Yeah, I would like to see that.
Yeah,
that's basically all I have to say about it. I would recommend it if you like a dark comedies about this kind of subject. It's on Prime Video, so you could go check it out there if you want to.
Yeah, that's where I watched it.
That's where I watched it too. All right. Is that any other thoughts before we move on to our next film?
I don't think so. I think that's all my thoughts.
All right. Perfect. We didn't mention the dead gay son joke. Very funny.
Oh,
very great.
Yeah.
Line.
Great
best,
joke.
Great.
I've heard
great
that
line
before.
So it
was funnier in context.
Which is hard to say. Like, it's surprising. Like, it's already funny. It's already a funny line, but then in context, it's even funnier. with them in their football uniforms in the casket.
And him being like, oh, my dead gay son. We stan. What a guy. What a dad. Dad of the year goes to him.
Well, I mean, maybe not. I don't know. Redemption arc of the year, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll ponder that over our ad break here. And then when we get back, we'll talk about your movie, which is Captain Fantastic.
And we're back. Back to it.
Back on the grind with our second cinema, our second swap, or our other
our
side
second,
of the swap.
Yeah, film flip.
Our film flip. Oh, that would have been a fun name,
I think,
too.
That was probably one of the ones in the options. We went through a lot of options for this series.
Yeah, we did. And then we landed on maybe the most generic one, but it still works. It's a good one, I think.
The cinema swap. It works. So this is Captain Fantastic, which came out in 2016, directed
my favorite Avengers movie
by Matt Ross. It had a $5 million budget and it made $22.8 million in the box office.
Yeah, which is good for a road trip movie because they got a lot of different locations. Yeah, they got to get that big bus. So $5 million is a good budget for this. And then they, like you said, they made a lot back. Got an Oscar nomination for Vigo, so
yeah,
wow, good for them. Do you want to read the synopsis here?
Sure.
Before we jump into our convo,
my other two sentence synopsis.
Perfect.
Ben and Leslie have raised their 6 children in the woods, training them in exercise, school, and survival skills. When Leslie dies, Ben and the kids take a journey to attend Leslie's funeral, which Leslie's father has insisted they not attend.
Attend. Man, pretty, it's a pretty good, like, log line for a movie.
Yeah,
know?
It's very,
like,
simple. I mean, there's a lot more going on, but just
right
generically is a pretty simple structure of a movie road trip film.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, like, we're not talking about the movie yet, but it is interesting when you start it. It takes a while for it to actually turn into the road trip movie.
Yeah.
So it's like, it really takes its time in the beginning, because I purposely didn't read, like, anything about what this movie was about. So it took, a long time for me to realize where it was going. And then when they finally got on the road trip, like, oh, okay, it's a road trip movie.
Yeah.
But it's interesting how I feel like a lot of road trip movies are so eager to just get to the car and get to the gags. But they do take a lot of time establishing everything, which is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, this movie, again, Matt Ross direct and wrote it. He wrote it after wondering what would happen if he were completely present in his children's lives. And he noted that he thought, like, modern technology was making that difficult.
Yeah, that's
so
valid.
That's kind of what inspired it. And then he also took autobiographical details from his own life, which were inspired by his own childhood living in what he called alternative living communities. So maybe cults. I don't know. That sounds like
that's
basically
what
that would
be. Like, yeah. Or more just hippie.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, maybe, I guess, I don't know how old he is, but I guess if he grew up in that time where, like, hippie communes were
right
not as cultish, but were
right
still culty, I guess.
He's 52, born in 70, so, you know, he could have,
maybe,
like,
in the
70s.
80s, late 70s.
Yeah, as a kid.
Sure.
Definitely. Interesting.
Speculating about his life here.
Speculating about his life, yep. His personal life. Do you want to explain why you picked this one?
Yeah, sure. I watched this one in 2019, so it's been a few years, and I really liked it at the time. I found it similar to a lot of other kind of indie movies like this that have a lot of feelings, like Hunt for the Wilder People, Little Miss Sunshine, stuff like that. And I thought that you would like it, and I have thought that for a while. And since we started this series, I had had it in a list, but I had often felt when we've done other ones that it just was, the subject matter was a little too depressing in some parts. And so I just didn't feel ready to do it yet, you know? But I think I had told you a while ago, right. I was like, don't watch it because I want to save it for this. Yeah. And I think you had it in your watch list as well. And then when we were deciding here, it was one of the ones that I have in like a letterbox list of potential ideas for this. And I was like, I think it's time. I think we have to do it.
It's time for Captain Fantastic to come out and save the day. So I had it in my watch list, like you said. I don't know. I definitely heard about it when it came out. And then I just like, I wasn't like as into movies then. And so like I heard about it, but it wasn't something like I saw. And I think like maybe when I got Letterboxd, it's like a pretty like decently popular indie movie on Letterboxd, like in that same realm.
It's popular in the cinephile universe.
Oh my word. Yeah. In the, like the light cinephile universe. So it's on like a lot of those lists, I think, that you look at when you first get Letterboxd. And so I probably saw it on one of those and just like added it to my watch list.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't one I was ever like chomping at the bit to watch. So when you told me not to watch it, I was like, okay, I'll just wait until we do a thing. I have so many things in my watch list. Like it's not like I only have 5 things and I'm trying to get through everything.
Yeah, right.
I will never get through everything on there in my entire life.
My watch list is like, it just keeps growing.
Yeah. I like on your stats where it shows like how many movies on your watch list you watched that year and then how much you added. And it's always like 3 times the
amount.
Yeah,
I don't like that stat. It always makes me feel bad. Well, and I'm not even putting all the movies that I want to watch in my watch list either. Like, there's other movies that I'm like, I'd like to watch that, but I don't mark it in my watch list. Right. You know what I mean?
Your real watch list is even bigger. Your mental watch list. I watched this a few days ago, and I definitely, I liked it a lot. I think I thought, like I said, I didn't really read anything about it purposely, and I think I expected it to be more comedic, just based on maybe the poster.
Sure. It's a very like colorful poster.
Yeah, colorful poster. The characters look like kind of Wes Anderson-y.
Yeah,
so
eccentric.
I think I expected it to be more like that. Or even like Little Miss Sunshine, I think, is even more in that vein than this movie is. Where the characters are, I mean, all the characters in this movie are pretty quirky. But I guess in that movie, they're more like, I don't know. Wes Anderson is not an adjective, but like, you know what I mean.
Yes, I know what you mean.
These characters are definitely a lot more grounded in like reality.
Yeah.
And not archetypes as much. I really liked it. I think that it definitely feels like a Sundance movie. Mm. There's movies that just feel like, oh yeah, this is a Sundance movie.
Yeah.
And that's what I like, get such a Sundance vibe from this. And I think that the performances are really what carry it for sure. Like the script is great. I think the script also helps the performances, at least the dialogue. Maybe I think there are like some pacing issues, but the performances, especially from Viggo, are like what make you watch. Even the kids, though, like
all
the
kids
of the performances
are all good.
Are really strong.
The older kids, especially, obviously,
yeah, like the kid from
lot.
1917.
Yeah,
he was great.
And the other boy as well, because those two boys kind of play the more. Like leading supporting kids and then the others are kind of participate, but it's more about those two boys and their relationship with the father. And I think both of them gave really good performances. And then even the little kids that had, you know, select
great.
Scenes, they were both really cute and like gave great little performances reciting their lines.
And they have to do so many different things too. Like I said, it takes a while to get to the road trip, so they have to be living, they're like living in the woods basically, all of them.
Yeah.
And they've got to like do all these like exercises and all of these different like things with knives, and I'm assuming they didn't really go rock climbing, but they had to like do a green screen rock climb probably.
Right.
So they have a lot of like things too, where it's not just like they're standing on screen and like someone saying, okay, deliver the line like this, go. And like, they have to really commit.
They're having to really do things. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was definitely impressed with that. And then like once it gets into the road trip, it's definitely more what you would expect. But I do like how throughout the whole movie, it takes a route of, it's never really on anyone's side, I guess. Like, you definitely don't like the dad fully, but you also like can understand some of the things that like he's saying or like that he's decided to do. And so it's like you're Especially, I think this is best shown when they go to the, I think it's his sister-in-law's house.
Yeah.
I think that's who it is. And, like, you see the contrast there, and, like, you see what their arguments are, and even maybe the grandparents' arguments later in the movie. And then you see his arguments, and, like, you can see both sides, kind of, and it's, like, you feel like the answer is somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
And I think that the movie knows that, because that's what the conclusion is, like, they end up somewhere in the middle, which is the right conclusion.
Because both sides are so extreme, both with, like, when at the sister-in-law's house, like, those scenes are so funny because they're so extreme. Like, I just love the contrast between her boys being, like, so dumb and his kids being, like, so insanely smart by having absolutely no, like, social skills or understanding. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's really interesting to see the balance. And like you said, you have to look at it with, you know, a more nuanced mindset, because it's like you're rooting for him and you want him to, you know, be there and be included. And it's like, but he just wants what Leslie wanted. And like, you know, you don't want the grandparents to be so mean, but it just but then at the same time you're like, dude, like
settle down on a couple of these things, like, take it down a notch.
So I really appreciate though his like journey and being able to see his mental process through a lot of it, of kind of like he maybe is starting to feel some of the things when he has the conversation with Bo, the oldest son, about how like the mom and him kind of went behind his back to do the college applications and stuff like that. And then, you know, until he finally sees the daughter get injured, and that's when he sort of like flips completely.
I was wondering what you thought about that too, because I do think it's interesting because it has kind of like, it has a twist. But it's a twist where it's like the characters know the twist, but they just kind of keep that from the audience.
Mm-hmm.
One of those. So I thought, I don't know if those always work. I think it was like a varying success in this, but I was wondering what you thought about that one, because like the twist, I guess, is that, I mean, the middle son, I guess, knows that the mom wasn't happy at like the, wherever they're living in the woods. And the dad also knows that. So it's like, and when you look at the back of the movie, you can see where the hints of that were left. But I always think it's interesting when movies kind of withhold information that characters know, but like the audience doesn't know.
Sure.
So I was wondering if you thought like how successful that was, because I do think like it was successful in a way, but it's also sometimes I think can be like a tricky thing to navigate, because it feels sometimes like you're cheating the audience, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it probably could have been maybe talked about more, or maybe brought up more by the younger kid, like that maybe he felt it more or would say something to a different sibling about it. You know, if you knew what I knew, if you heard what I heard. So it kind of leads more into that, or kind of shows more of their communication barrier, because I think it does show it a little bit. Just the point of stress between the two of them, between Relian and the dad, of like, you have the rock climbing scene, and obviously he isn't happy about the gifts and stuff. And so there's tension there, but I think they could have given more reason behind the tension instead of the kid just kind of casually being like, you killed mom. Like, just because there's not a lot of grounds to that. And I think it kind of starts to click when the mom, the grandmom says, like shows him the letter and is like, she did like change her mind or wanted to be there, I guess. Or had written this about, you know, going through one of her manic episodes and stuff. I wish that it would have been a little more clear, but I don't think it necessarily was like too unclear that it made it hard to translate, I guess.
Yeah, and like it's kind of, there's a lot more movie after that too, so it's not just like it's the big revelation and then the movie's just over. I do like how I think it's sometimes hard when you have big character moments, like I guess when the dad leaves the kids at the grandparents' house and then he shaves his beard and everything, and like I think it's hard having big character moments like that, and then there's like 25-30 minutes left of the movie. Sure. But I do think that they did a good job of like making it feel earned, like the rest of that time. And there was still, I guess, a little bit of story in that, but it was also, I think, nice to just have a little bit more conclusion to see like that he actually had changed and like what maybe their life would look like in the future. Mm-hmm. And then they did a little bit of a time jump, which sometimes time jumps are like cheesy, but I thought this one was nice, which we can get a little more into maybe if we want to just talk about the ending maybe a little later. But if there's anything we want to touch on other than that, we probably should talk about that first.
Yeah. What did you like the like cremation scene?
I did. I know a lot of people, I always say a lot of people, I just saw people in Letterboxd talk about maybe how they don't like that scene. Or specifically, I guess, like the Sweet Child of Mine, like song. I thought that was a great scene.
Yeah, and I like that song and stuff, and that's why I was curious if you did, because I think it works since it already showed the kids singing and stuff before. So it sort of ties in that it was very clearly that they used to sing around the fire at their house and sing as a family and play music together and do those kind of things. So I thought it was a good, like, full circle moment to at least, because it's hard when you have a lot of characters, especially kids, giving them arcs and kind of helping see their line. And obviously they were very deeply impacted by, you know, the death of their mother. And I think that it was able to give kind of an arc to some of the characters that weren't as like highlighted, like Rel and, you know, Bo were, where they got their own little arcs, I guess. But give more of an arc to the girls, especially, and kind of their form of healing, and then the younger too as well.
Yeah, and it kind of ties into the theme that you're kind of aware of, I guess, at that point, where, I mean, throughout the movie, it's obvious that the dad, and he's taught his kids this, have like rejected modern culture or like popular culture and basically everything in the world. And I do think it's like an interesting meeting in the middle where, I mean, Sweet Child of Mine is like one of the most popular songs of all time. And so it is like them embracing like this thing that they love from the world, I guess, which they say they hate. And like the mom did too, brought that into their lives. And I think it's like kind of a nice representation of that as well, where like you can take things, like you don't have to reject everything that is in the world to make something like your own, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. I thought like it tied into that too, because it was just something that was maybe not like from a philosopher, you know. I think music was supposed to be that for them too.
One thing that I think about it too is you probably think like, oh, well, here they are talking about classical music this whole time, but now they're like talking about this or singing this other song. And I kind of have my own headcanon that like the mom and dad probably were like hippie teenagers that like went to concerts and, you know, were into that before they shifted. So they probably were like, I don't know, into that kind of stuff and the rock. Like, I see that, like, if I see them before I see, like, them being rebels at the time that they would have been younger would have been them being hippies and, you know, him with his long hair, wearing a bandana, and them wearing tie-dye t-shirts and all that is what I imagine.
Yeah. Well, and they wouldn't have brought, like, the records or the CDs, I guess, with them, but they would have still known the songs. And so that's probably just like what they taught the kids. Like, they don't probably even know the name of the song or the band, but it's just something that they were taught. And like, I think it's interesting too, how it's like a different arrangement too. Like, it starts off nice and slow and then it builds a little bit more. And so it's like more of their song rather than like a needle drop of Sweet Child of Mine, which wouldn't have worked.
Right, no, just, not like, at all.
taken out like a vinyl record and like, all right, guys, time for mom's favorite song. And then just that. I do like how they had to play it and sing it and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that scene was pretty good. And definitely like a nice moment of catharsis, because I think the movie is, even though it's funny, there's like a lot of stressful situations. And a lot of even the funny parts are like stressful as well. So
yeah,
I liked it. It was like a very nice moment. That after a lot of that stress.
Yeah, I agree. You want to talk about the ending now, or did you have anything else you wanted to share about it?
No, yeah, I think I didn't really have much to say about the ending. I just didn't want to, like, get to the ending and then jump
I think,
back.
Like, just before that, like, there's just a lot of really great moments, you know, throughout mm-hmm. the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, just little scenes that are really funny. Obviously, you have the dinner table scene at the sister-in-law's house.
Yeah, that was definitely my favorite scene. It
you
was
have
so funny.
The grocery store scene where they're stealing from the grocery store. Uh-huh. You have the
when he's flirting with a girl at the campground.
Yeah, the scene with the girl.
And he proposes to her. That was like more awkward than any like
the scene with the cop
of, like,
coming in.
Or, yeah, man.
And then
right,
like singing the Jesus song with the cop is funny. There's just a lot of really good little moments in this that tie it all together, I think, and really
Definitely.
Showcase like what this family is all about, which I think wraps up in that final end sequence where you're seeing them living in a house, but they're on a farm, and it's clear that they're going to school now at a real school.
Man.
So it's just all very, like,
really
it's
nice
very
scene.
Sweet. And I love that, you know, this is after the older son leaves. This is the younger kids. But I love how he made the artistic choice to cut the music out. Where
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. And they keep it on their table for so long.
And they
long,
keep it on the table.
Like,
and you're kind of almost like, it sort of speaks to the, like, you're sitting there. And maybe the whole time you're like, their lifestyle's kind of weird, I don't know. And then it gets to that, and they're sitting there, and the music cuts out, and they're just vibing, and they're all, you know, doing their own thing, but mm-hmm. they're together, and it's just silence, and you're like, wait, I kind of like this. Like, yeah. What if my family lived on a farm and didn't have, you know, tech and stuff?
Yeah.
And I really love that, like, 30 seconds, 25 to 30 seconds that it just, like, sits there on them. And you can obviously see that they've mended their relationships and, you know, are working together and coming together as a family. And it's very sweet and nice.
Yeah, yeah. And the decision to cut the music and leave it that long of a shot is, like, actually really, like, not a Sundance choice. And so I think that was, like, a really good thing to set them apart, because a lot of people would have wanted music to, like, underscore
the
emotions
of
that scene.
Yeah, some kind of, like, needle drop.
Right, a needle drop, or even just, like, some nice sweeping violins, or, like, some melodies that maybe were in the beginning. I don't know. I think the silence in that is, like, says more than any of the songs that they could have chosen.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I just really like the ending. I thought it was
I really appreciate too that, like, they show you the bus and, like, how they repurposed it.
And they're getting chicken eggs.
Yeah,
and
I think it's cool that like they were able, like, he was able to find the balance of retaining what they loved about their how they had been living previously, but combining it with something new, and how he you know, you could see the kid was running around with the string and making a mess, how he lets them still live in chaos, but it's more of like a, I guess, structured chaos.
Yeah. If they're in a house, actually, then you see like the lunch bags on the table and they're going to school.
Yeah.
And,
and you assume he really must have a car because like they're not using the bus anymore. So
right.
It just is like,
very true.
I don't know. It's very nice. It's a very like wholesome ending in the midst of like this long emotional journey of like this family and him.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's nice too, because I think a lot of people now especially are like trying to figure out how to balance, like, I don't know, maybe personal beliefs or like feelings of burnout from different societal structures or the government in general. I don't know. There's like a lot of things wrapped up in that. And I think it's like really nice to see just the conclusion that he was able to create, where like he was able to find like his own sense of peace without like compromising himself, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was just really nice. And I was like, I don't think I expected that ending, even though it seems like the most obvious ending. I think an easier ending to write would have been he left the kids, maybe not with the grandparents, but like with the sister-in-law or something.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a hard reality to imagine, like something that like being able to find that sense of peace. I don't know.
Yeah, so definitely.
I'm glad that he was able to write that and like maybe heal his own like childhood that we speculated about like 20 minutes ago.
Yeah. Wow.
All right. Well, with that, I think our question of the week should, because we've already done like favorite high school movie. We talked about high school movies at Breakfast Club. So let's do, what is your favorite road trip movie? Because, you know, there's some good road trip movies out there. Maybe it's this one. Maybe it's one of the 15 road trip movies Kevin Hart has done. I don't know. There's quite a few.
Are we there yet?
That. Tommy Boy. Man, so many movies.
Yeah, wow.
What is your favorite road trip movie? I have to think. Like, there's like...
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, I like Little Miss Sunshine.
Of course.
I don't know that I'm like a super big road trip movie person.
I think it's hard. It can definitely fall into like stereotypes or like trends that they all follow. I really liked Unpregnant. That was pretty good.
That was a fun one. That was a very fun one.
So that one might be, I mean, I don't know if that would be my favorite, but I would definitely say that's one I really like. Borat, I guess, is technically a road trip movie.
Oh, but, you know what movies, what are they called? I love the Trip movies. So the Trip series where they have like the trip to Italy.
Oh, yes. And Greece. Those movies.
Yeah, uh-huh. Those are good movies.
Yeah.
It's funny because I watched the most, like, I watched the newest one before I watched any of the other ones because it was playing at the Alamo. And then I went back and watched one or two of the other ones.
I would also say Pee Wee Herman's Big Adventure. That's
oh,
a road trip movie.
Oh, my gosh. Llewyn Davis.
Alvin and the Chipmunks Road Chip.
Oh, man.
Not that one. Maybe they made a DS game based on that one.
Logan. That's a road trip movie, right?
Yeah, I think
so.
If
you want to get in that superhero movie. Yeah,
maybe. I don't know. There's so many.
A lot of options, so let us know.
Sonic 1. I don't know. Sonic 2. I haven't seen it, but Sonic 1 is a road trip movie. So, yeah, let us know. You can answer that question on any of our social medias. Just search Secondhand Film Critics on your favorite platform, and we'll be there. So you can answer that there. You can email us at secondhandfilmcritics@gmail.com. You can go on our website. Spotify also has an option to answer the question. Yep. So many ways to get that answer in, and we will read them out on our next episode, which is... another standby series. We're going to do one more series before we take a quick 1 week break.
Yep.
So we get all our series in. Besides, we've never seen again. We need to do that one too. But
eventually, we'll get back to that one.
We'll get back to it.
Yeah. So we'll be doing a triple feature, which is pretty exciting because I feel like it's been a good while since we've done a triple feature.
Yeah. They're hard to prepare for because you got to get someone to like pick three movies. So
yeah, it's a lot. It's a big ask of someone, and then we have to watch three movies. So it just is.
Yeah, big ask of ourselves.
Yeah, big ask of the guest.
But So who's our guest for this one?
So our friend of the pod, Joe Miller, who maybe if you listen to a lot of episodes of ours, you hear his name often because he answers our question of the week. So we read his
answers.
Except
for this week, because maybe he hasn't played a lot of video games, so he might not have had an answer.
Well, maybe he didn't want to listen to the Beethoven episode either. Maybe he was like...
Why? Come on, the Beethoven episode's the best. I think that was a pretty good episode, so...
I don't know. Joe doesn't seem like a video game guy to me. I could be wrong.
I thought
you
were going to say Joe doesn't seem like a Beethoven guy.
No, I feel like he seems like a
Beethoven
guy.
Everyone's a
Beethoven
guy.
I feel like he doesn't seem like a video game guy.
Maybe he's a Beethoven SNES guy.
Maybe so. Maybe we'll ask him next week on the pod.
Yes, on the podcast, we will have him on, and he will share his triple feature, which he'll just pick three movies that have like some theme to them, and then we'll go through them and talk about all three.
Wow.
That's how the show goes.
So excited.
Pretty fun. That will come out on Tuesday at 10 a.m. when all of our episodes come out. Anything until then?
I got nothing.
All right. Well, until next time, I'm Noah.
And I'm Captain Incredible.
I thought you were going to say a dead gay son.
Oh, and I am a dead gay son.
And we're
your second
hand film.